I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.
So, hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am all business, and one half of that podcast, senior writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, author of How to Fight Presidents, and man in need of help, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie, my savior, perhaps? Say hello.
Hey, everybody, I'm Soren Bowie. I write for American Dad. I've lived in Los Angeles for the last 14 years of my life. I used to grow up in Colorado, and I'm also going to try and be as fast as I possibly can. But the problem is that I can't keep up with my own words. So that's why you're getting like a weird version of where I grew up. This episode is brought to you by Jiminy's, maker of sustainable dog food made with cricket protein. That's right, cricket protein is a superfood that is delicious, nutritious, and easy to digest for dogs. Save 25% on your first purchase. Go to jiminys.com/QQ25 and use code QQ25 at checkout.
Dan, that was so fast. That was so fast. It reminded me of the Micro Machines guy. Do you remember those commercials?
Oh, yeah, the Hot Wheels, right? Or
no.
Like Hot Wheels, sort of?
Well, yeah, Micro Machines.
Little cars.
Okay, I didn't realize how far back I had to start. Yeah, I thought you thought this was a Hot Wheels guy. No, he's a Micro Machines guy. But yes, they were the little cars. They were, Micro Machines were tiny cars that then also experimented with the idea of putting tinier cars in the tiny cars, which was obviously a big hit with me. I thought there was nothing better than that. But yeah, Micro Machines were a big deal. Did that not carry over to your age?
They're very familiar. I think the thing that is most familiar about them is the Micro Machines guy, who was just like a very unassuming looking man whose shtick was speaking very quickly.
Right. Yeah, he sounded like an auctioneer in all the commercials.
While he was reading like ad copy about the cars.
I don't think I've seen a toy commercial in probably like 18 years. I don't even know what they're like now. But there was like an institution when you were a kid, because during Saturday morning cartoons, they'd just pump you full of those commercials, and toy commercials had like a very specific flow to them, and Micro Machines was like, nope, we're gonna go as fast as we fucking can. we're gonna show you how fast these cars are, because everything in this commercial is fast.
John Moshita Jr., also known as Motormouth John Moshita and the fast talking guy.
Perfect.
Looks like a thousand guys I've seen in my life. There was a period of time in the 80s when this was most guys. They just only had like three different models of guy in the 80s, and he was one of the most popular ones. We weren't making different guys for back then. People forget that.
We should, at some point, that would be worth thinking about. It would be worth thinking about who was, like, give me the archetype for the 90s. Like, who was the guy? Like, who the guy that you see everywhere? And I feel like I could do that for really easily, just like off the top of my head, for about 2010 to 2020. And it was the lead singer of LCD Sound System.
Let me see what he looks like.
James Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
James Murphy is somebody, I think that there are probably 14 of him at my gym.
You could just spot guess his exact year of birth.
Yeah, it's so clear to me. Like, I see him and I'm like, ah, okay, I know what time period we're in.
Yeah.
I feel like you could do that for like every year of your life. I think you could do that for it'd be easy to do that for the 80s and the 90s and now. Yeah. And then what, I'm just so curious what the 20s guy is going to be.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to like him. And that's not a testament to him being bad. It's just, I'm getting old.
No, it's just the passage of time.
Yeah, he's going to be wearing a cartoon t-shirt, which is like a new thing that
I don't fucking get people like Mickey Mouse t-shirts that are earnest. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Out of here with that fucking shit. I was speaking fast. It used to be really important to me to speak fast when I was doing my old show, Obsessive Pop Culture Disorder, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. because that's like a natural cadence for me, is to go very fast. And commenters started to complain about how fast it was. And part of me wanted to troll them a little bit, but another part of me, after just sort of getting not bored with writing that show, because I had fun with that one right until the end, but just sort of like, what is enough? It became easy enough to do that show that I wanted to like an asshole, find more challenges for myself.
You want
to
make it fresh.
And I thought, like, what can I do for me? I'm going to be like one of the fast rappers, like David Diggs or Sage Francis, but for reading copy about movies. I'm going to see how many words I can get in here, which is like, so I think it's clear that this coincides right around the time that I stopped having a boss who could talk to me, because it's anyone with authority over me would be like, hey, this is just for you. And it's not, it doesn't make the thing better. It's only at best like an asterisk interesting fact that like, oh, did you know this is the fastest anyone has talked about Pinocchio? That doesn't make the show better. It's only a little interesting. And in fact, I think it bothers people. It makes people very uncomfortable and anxious to watch someone talk as fast as you do. But I didn't have a boss, so I just did my circle jerk thing for myself. Yeah.
Yeah, there were definitely times with my column where once I started to realize that the warden wasn't looking, where I was just like, well, let's see what I can do, and just trying a bunch of things. Sometimes I'd land on stuff where I'd be like, oh, this is fun. This is really good. And other times, like, I look back on that stuff and I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, yeah. Well, I was really trying something here. It's like four levels deep into who was actually writing this thing. And at the end of the year, when I get my reviews, like, well, at one point, Jack was like, I feel like you just never really get a handle on the point you're making in an article. I was like, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but yeah, so sorry, Jack. I could write with a handle, but like, I the point of this article was that I wrote it backwards. No one can tell, but like, it was an interesting writer challenge for me. I think if you evaluated on this rubric that no one could possibly know about, I think you'll agree it's quite an accomplishment.
In my current job, this last episode that I wrote, there's a moment where somebody has to be. What I wanted was for someone to be like basically groaning SOS, mm-hmm. and the Morse code of SOS. So it's three short, three long, three short.
Yeah.
You're familiar with Morse code, yes, right? Yes. And so, but I wanted it to be, I thought it would be fun to like think of it as a song, and like what would be like a song. If somebody heard this groaning, they could be like, that's a song. In the same way we're like, when a crow is like, rah, rah, you could go tainted love. Like you would like sing along to it afterwards. And I was like, so I'm like, it's the most impossible challenge in the world to try and find that, because nobody's written that down. Like there, even people who do songs that are called SOS, like the Police, they're not also thinking, what if we just came up with our brand new time signature that doesn't exist?
Right.
And so I'm like racking my brain, like searching the internet for something that does not fucking matter. And finally I find this song and I put it in there. And by the time we get to like the rewrite, I'm trying to explain this to my boss and he's like, don't do that. He's like, this doesn't, yeah. And people were like genuinely mad at me. Cause I found, so if I could turn back time. So it's, if I mm-hmm. could turn back time, that's three, it's one, two, three, and then long, long, long. If I could find some way, like it's in Morse code basically. And I was so excited. And like, when we got to it in the moment at the table, he's like, does it have to be a song? I'm like, yes. And here's the reason. And I start like giving the reason. He's like, no. And everyone else in the room is like mad too. Like it just did not play. And I was like, who is this for? It was just for me.
Yeah. I wrote an alt joke in one of my most recent drafts. That didn't make it into the show with good reason. And it's because I wrote the joke as a haiku and then like talked about it being a haiku later. Like here's a joke. And then then here's me making sure that you knew that this was a haiku. And even as I was like submitting it, I thought, My bosses are going to think I have too much time. They're going to give me more work. they're going to think I'm bored or something.
Yeah, it doesn't. If you're not in the room to like make that smile that you, your signature Daniel smile after you think you've done a very clever joke.
Yeah.
Then no one actually knows. Like it just glosses over everyone. You need to be able to like tell the joke and then do that. Like,
yeah.
Did everyone catch that? Did everyone hear what I just did?
Right.
So everyone can then go, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay. What, like, that's where you live. That's what you were dreaming of. Is that nice?
Right. what every comedian craves from their audience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's clever, I guess.
I see the work that you did. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah, that's
if what I was going for.
If I could pick the one thing that's like my Achilles heel with comedy, it's that I don't know the difference between funny and clever.
Yeah.
So like I will try and do something very clever. And then when it, even if people notice it, they're like, yeah, but it, so what? Yeah. It's not, it didn't give me a visceral reaction. I didn't laugh at it.
Right.
It's just I can tell clever you did.
I can't. If an audience doesn't laugh at something and then I explain afterwards, okay, but the thing you have to understand is I spent a lot of time on this. They're not going to suddenly burst out laughing like, oh, this was an evening.
Yeah. You'll find that with my comedy, the very best jokes are the ones that I then have to explain for 5 minutes.
But the reason I was speaking fast at the beginning of this podcast is because I don't know if you recalled, but I said I was a man in need of help. So I do. I need help coming up with a new word or phrase to describe a very specific problem I'm having.
Oh, so happy about this.
I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but I am doing something consistently, specifically wrong for the first time. So I'll explain it literally what it is. I have my spot where my keys go every day, and I put them in the same spot, and I've never had a problem with it before. And for the last 2 weeks, I keep not doing it. And I don't know, it's become such muscle memory, and nothing about my home or my world has changed, but I keep losing my fucking keys. And sometimes the most common place they've been have been the pocket of my running shorts, which are then in the washing machine. So that's now the first place I look when my keys aren't where they're supposed to be. And I would say 6 out of 10 times, that's where they are. But the other 4 are just random spots in the house where I've just put them down where I never put them down before. And again, this is a new problem after I was batting 1,000 for the first 6 months of living here. And I want like, because the keys is a new problem, but the suddenly getting something wrong for the first time and then doing it repeatedly, that is not a new occurrence to me. That's happened before where it's like, man, for a week there, I was forgetting to close the fridge, even though I've never struggled with that before. And then for like a week, I wasn't closing it properly over and over again. It's weird that I suddenly have this glitch.
God, this is so familiar in that I think, so we used to do these articles on like words that English should steal from other languages where like they just have a word for this type of thing. And I think that there was one in Russian that was like, he who keeps stepping on the same rake.
I think
the way what it translated to. And it was just like somebody who keeps fucking up in the very specific same way over and over again, despite themselves. I don't remember what it was though.
I didn't hear anything you said after someone who keeps fucking up in a very
fucking up in the same way over and over again despite themselves. But I can't remember what the word was. Or if it was even Russian or if I'm
is this a thing
this
that's happened to you before? I feel like it's not.
Yes.
I know it's not just me. There's a throwaway joke in the show Scrubs where Zach Braff is talking or JD is talking about how once a year, every year, I put my wristwatch on the wrong hand, and that is definitely not never on the wrong hand, but like every once in a while, I will just not have my watch on me when I leave the house. And I'm like, oh man, that's the first time I've done that. And then it's like the first time somebody ran under a 5 minute mile, because then it happened over and over again after that.
Yeah. I do have a similar thing where I frequently, especially when we're going on flights, I have to be really careful, and now Colleen even knows to remind me. I will leave my phone, and I don't know why. I think it has to do with, like, I pack a bag, and instead of just having the things in my pockets that I expect, I put everything in my backpack and maybe just assume that it's there. But there have been several instances where I'm panicked flying back to the house to get my phone before the plane leaves. And it's, I don't know why I do it.
It's so bizarre because it's the kind of, like, it's phone especially, it's like, it's hard to leave your phone anywhere.
Yeah, it's the minute it's not in my pocket, I'm uneven. I immediately notice something is weird. I feel like I'm missing something. And for some reason, when I'm like, we're going to like get on a plane, all bets are off. Everything's going to feel different. And so I just don't expect it. And get to the airport, sometimes get to the, like the shuttle. Sometimes we get to just our parking. And I'm like, I fucking did it again. I forgot it. It makes it very hard then for me to chastise my children when they're like absent-minded and they forget something. When my son doesn't remember something. At any point, you can throw this shit back in my face.
I found a very helpful insane person hack for myself. Whenever I'm on vacation, I would always start the vacation with like, well, I'm staying in a hotel and I'm in a different state or a different country even. I don't need my keys that I carry with me everywhere, so I'm just going to put them in my suitcase and I won't need them again until it's time to go home. And I would be incredibly anxious anytime I left my hotel because I would like pat my pockets for the things like phone, wallet, keys. And I felt such an imbalance that now I just carry my keys. Fuck it. I carry my keys with me. I'm having a better time.
You're just in Canada carrying keys around. You can't open a single thing in the entire country. It is really freeing when I'm on vacation and I don't have things in my pocket where I'm like, holy shit, I'm a lighter person out here in the world. But there's that kind of uneasiness to it as well. And I will say that anytime that I've ever parked somewhere to go get on a flight and they give me a little ticket and you're like, you need those tickets. Somehow the systems have not come up with technology where you're like, oh, I can just look you up by name or whatever. No, when you get back and like you don't have your parking ticket, you're fucked. And so I will say that every single time that I've gotten one of those and thought I should keep this safe, it is by sheer luck that I've ever found it again.
Yeah.
Like I'll be like getting ready to leave that day at the air, like to go back home and packing and being like, oh, fuck, here's this thing crumpled up at the bottom. Oh, I'm going to need this.
I very similarly will very deliberately, I need to keep this ticket safe, so I put it somewhere safe so I don't have to think about it. And then I check it several thousand times. Like, there's no, it doesn't matter what I do. It's still going to be a thing that weighs on my brain. This happened this week. A bunch of the writers got together in person to just like hang out and have dinner in New York. So I drove into the city and put my car in a parking garage and took a ticket, put it in my like very clear mind. I take this ticket. I'm going to put it in my wallet. It will live in the wallet forever. It's tight in there. It's never coming out. And then I'm going to put the wallet in my pocket. And then I had some time to kill walking around the city. So I took my wallet out a few times to look and confirm that the ticket was there. And even like sitting at dinner, in the middle of a conversation with someone being like, yeah, no, totally. Hold on one second. I have to go look at and stare at my wallet. Yeah, it's there. It's still there. Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing about this conversation prompted me to do that, but like, I wouldn't be able to hear you if I didn't check this right now.
Yeah, there it is. All right. Looks good. When I was in, let me get my hoity-toity hat on for a second. When I traveled abroad, Daniel, I was in England and
is that when you were eating peanut butter passed out on a bench?
Yeah. Okay. Like either a little before, a little after. It's circa.
Sure.
And so I joined the Ultimate Frisbee team there and they don't take it very seriously, but they do take drinking very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I was way out of my league. They were drinking a lot. And at the time I was young enough that I didn't recognize this as a red flag, but they would expect me to drink an awful lot. And so I was drinking quite a bit while I was in England with this team. And it got to the point where I also had a phone when I was there. And that was the first cell phone I'd ever had. When I was in college, like there wasn't really a need for it or they didn't exist. I can't remember which. And finally I needed a cell phone while I was there. And so I had this P piece of shit giant brick of a cell phone, and it was constantly losing it. I would find it. There was one night at a there's some like club party, and I started looking for it and found it in the trash in pieces. Like someone had either it had smashed and someone cleaned it up, or someone had seen it and was like, fuck this thing, and just smashed it. But it was a tank too. So I could just put it back together and put like the rubber sheet of buttons back in and and just smash it all back together. And it worked. And it got to the point where I was like losing it so frequently when I was drunk that I eventually came up with the ingenious solution where I got Velcro. And I put some of the Velcro on it, and then I put Velcro inside my pockets. So when I had like my going out pants that had Velcro in the pockets, and so I could put the phone in the pockets. But Velcro is like, it's got some gauge to it. So even just me in my jeans, you just see the stripe on either leg in my jeans. People are like, what's that? They're like, oh, funny story. I'm a complete drunk and I can't control myself and I can't take care of my own stuff. So I have to Velcro it to my body.
Is that how all Americans dress? Nope. Just the ones that you need to stay away from.
Yeah. I love your accent. Where are you from? It was a mess. And this actually really worked to solve my problem. And at the time I thought everyone should be doing this. Now looking back on it, I can see that that was a real, that right. should have been a red flag as well.
Right. So funny. Like, man, I solved my problem. And all I had to do was create several more problems.
Yeah. I learned from the first time that I couldn't put those pants in the dryer because it would start to peel. Like it was hot enough that it would start to melt the stickiness. And so I had to go get more scotch tape. And then I was like, okay, these are the pants I just wash. And then I lay out and they dry on their own. Like it just, this whole other world of issues that I had to then contend with so that I was allowed to keep drinking to the point of blacking out.
I got disastrously drunk at a bar in Los Angeles years ago and lost my phone in that bar. And went to the DJ and different bartenders and kept giving them, because I also wanted to leave the bar. Like I was done with ever having a phone again. And I kept, was like, hey, my name's Daniel. My phone is somewhere in here. I don't want, like, no one's gonna be able to find it until the lights come out at the end of the day. Please call me when you find it. And I was giving them the number to my missing cell phone. And I'm sure the bartenders and DJs were very patiently explaining to me why that doesn't work as a plan, but that information was not registering for me. So I was just like, why won't anyone help me? Why is everyone so mean to me in this bar?
For some context for listeners, when Dan drinks and is drunk and then is at a place where he no longer wants to be, I mean, it's like turning on a switch, first of all. It's not a gradual process. And once he realizes it, he just runs away.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't like say, all right, well, I'll say my goodbyes now. He just runs away.
Yeah. No, it's time to be in bed. Goodbye.
There was a night where we had gone out drinking. I noticed you had disappeared and I was like, I hope he's all right. And so I called you and I think I caught you while you were running.
Yeah.
Because you're breathing very hard and then you fell. And I think your glasses broke or you left them or something like
that. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I was sprinting home because I didn't want to be at the bar anymore. And I ate complete shit on the phone with you. Glasses fell off my face. Phone dropped. I think if you were listening closely, you could hear a stranger go, Jesus. Yeah. And I got up and I was like, I'm okay. And like, listener, I wasn't.
Yeah. But, and it surely somebody on the other end should have known that as well. But I think I just went, oh, he's fine.
Yeah.
Daniel's running home.
Good. He's running. He's working out.
Hey, if you care about the environment and have a dog and you've seen Snowpiercer, then consider reducing your dog's carbon footprint with Jiminy's sustainable dog food and treats made from cricket protein. Jiminy's is sustainably made because cricket protein uses less water and land to produce than any other meat that we have and drastically eliminates greenhouse gas emissions versus traditional animal proteins that are in dog food. One bag of Jiminy Cricket protein treats saved 220 gallons of water versus traditional animal treats. That's a lot. And folks, I live in California. We need that water. Send it to me. Feed your dog the Jiminy's and send me the water that you save. And you might be thinking, cricket protein, can that be easy for my dog to digest? And the answer is yes, very. Because cricket protein contains a fiber that's prebiotic, which supports a healthy gut in your dog. every type of dog. Jimenez is also good for dogs with food sensitivities or dogs with allergies. Insect protein is considered hypoallergenic for dogs and versus other allergy-triggering proteins like beef, chicken, fish, and soy. In fact, veterinarians are using Jimenez dog food in elimination diets to determine dog allergies. Jimenez was nice enough to send me some of their product, and I don't have a dog, but I do have neighbors with dogs, and I love their dogs. I gave one of the dogs some of these Jimenez treats, and frankly, the nature of our relationship has completely changed. When I see this dog out in the street, I swear to God, it winks at me. It knows that we're buddies now, and it doesn't want its owner to know that it loves me more than it loves them. I'm just choosing to assume that that's true. To learn more and save 25% on your first purchase, go to jimenez.com/QQ25 and use code QQ25 at checkout. That's jimenys.com/QQ25 with code QQ25.
Ah, the past. Speaking of running, I got another thing for you. It's also not really a question.
Okay.
But it was just a fun thing that happened that I want to tell you about. And
all
see
right,
if
then,
anything...
then I want to ask you a question after you're done.
Okay. Seems a little out of the ordinary for our podcast, but I'll allow it. I do an Orange Theory class. I've talked about this before with my friend Susan every Monday, and the design of this class, because it changes every day, this particular one, instead of the rounds being time-based as they often are, this is like you were going at your own pace with a treadmill. So you're on the treadmill and you go whatever speed you want, and you get to, when you hit quarter mile, get off the treadmill and do, I think like 10 air squats or something like that. And then you get back on the treadmill, whatever speed you want, do 0.2 of a mile air squats, 0.15 air squats, 0.1. And you just do that back and forth, and you keep your own pace, obviously.
What's an air squat? Is that just an unweighted
squat? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I was doing that, and I feel pretty confident about my speed in these classes usually. And I thought, as I'm running my first quarter mile, I think I'm going to be the first person off this treadmill easily. And when I get off, I see down the line, another guy, red shirt, ball cap, has beat me to it. And he's already doing his air squats. And I was like, oh, okay, well, the hunt is on now. And I got on the treadmill for my next round, knowing that like he's ahead of me, but I'm gonna beat this guy. Like I'm gonna make the time up, and I would beat him. And we're making eye contact. I'm getting off the thing and like looking for him. And after I beat him, I think twice in a row, then he was always beating me, and like to the point that I'm sprinting on this fucking treadmill, and I jump off it and I look and I see him there, and I like do a single, you got to be kidding me, clap and laugh because I'm having such a good time racing this guy.
Flirting with this man.
And I spend the rest of the class trying to chase him. And I'm talking to Susan next to me too. I'm like, I'm racing that guy in the red shirt. And she was like, all right, I think you got him. And I never got him. And I was so looking forward to talking to him afterwards because for me, like this was one of the most, it's always a fun class. This was the most fun for me. Because like I like an extra competitive edge to things. Yeah. I miss my old workout class in LA where I was dating the instructor and she would be verbally abusive to me in class. That's part of it.
You treasure those memories.
Yeah. So I was like, I like this sort of like combative energy that I had with this other guy in class. And at the end of class, we were stretching for cool down. And he's like, he skips that. He just walks out and he goes home. And I turn to Susan and I go, I don't think that guy knew we were racing.
But that means he was fucking going balls to the wall for nothing?
I guess.
That's psychotic behavior.
Quietly. I was really looking forward to like shaking his hand and like,
yeah,
I don't know, letting him have one of my future kids, I guess. Yes.
Quietly trying to demoralize another person who's near or at your same level is completely logical. I get that. But he was just doing it for himself? That's fucking crazy. Wait, he didn't know.
I know.
I watched just like for some context with that, I watched a guy trying to beat a time trial, like a mile long time trial on a course. And the way that they do it is that they have two rabbits in front of him, and not literal rabbits. They're people who are going to be sprinting the first half to like three quarters of the mile, so that you have someone to keep pace with. Because if it's just you, you won't run fast enough. Oh no, the rabbits are behind him. In front of him, he's got people to like break the wind, essentially. Let me see if I'm getting that right. Yeah, he's got somebody who he can ride their jet stream or whatever the fuck it is, where he just like stays behind them and can keep up with them and keep pace with them. I think they are the rabbits, but he's also like doing that. And I can't remember why there's like people on his heels. But it's like there's like you have to have all these people around you to actually do the thing, to like go fast enough. Because if it's just you, you won't do it on your own. You just can't. It's just like physically impossible and mentally impossible to do it on your own. Even if you know the time, you know you can watch the clock the entire way. If there's somebody else there next to you who's like you can beat, you'll do it better. You'll do a better job to beat them. And that instinct I get. A guy just going to this fucking gym to run his heart. You're not slow, Dan. I've heard your splits. Like, he's just going to the gym to do this on his own and just laying waste to his own PRs is headfirst insanity.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've squeezed all the juice out of this yet, but I have a question related to it.
Great.
It's a sweat question. What's your current sweat situation? Are you still... You're still a sweaty guy?
You know, I am, but I think it's weirdly gotten better. And I don't know. I'm not doing anything differently. I sweat a normal amount when I go for runs. I go to the gym a lot, but I don't. I feel like in years past, when I was at like peak gym and running time, that made me sweatier in my normal life. But now it's not. Now I feel like I sweat at only the appropriate times. It's still more than I'd like. If we can get technical here on the podcast, there's more ass sweat than I care for, and I don't really know what to do about that.
Good. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you. I mean, I'm always happy to work against my own best interest to have anyone ever date me.
I'm a really competitive guy who competes with people who don't know he's competing with him, and he's got a lot of ass sweat. What do you do? I'm not a very sweaty person in general. When I run, I sweat what I think is an adequate amount. My body is like, this is what you're going to need. This is the allotment you need to cool off, and then we're going to be done. And I respect that about my body. But I had a circumstance recently where I was like, it was so embarrassing how much I was sweating that I kept apologizing for it, where I've been biking to get my lunches because the world is ending from cars. And so I thought this will be a nice way that I can try and like push back against that. And so I've been biking wherever I want to go eat and then coming back. And obviously it's a little hotter here now because it's summer. But I crunched my time a little bit more than I normally do, and I was going to get a haircut. And so I was like, I rode my bike back home faster than normal, got back just in time to get in my car and drive to get a haircut. And as I'm driving, I've got the air conditioning on. I've got it blasting my face so that I can get to homeostasis. Like, I can get to a good state where I can walk in there and it's not weird.
Yeah.
That like I'm not heavy. My breath isn't heavy and that I'm not perspiring on my forehead or anything. I feel like I achieved that. And then I get there and I sit down in the chair and she throws that apron over me, that like canvas, no breathing apron. And it's just a sweat tent at this point. Like the once that your body temperature is up, she threw that thing around me and like pinned it against my neck. So there's no way any air can get in there or can breathe at all. And I just started to bake in there, just like simmer in my own juices.
No, wrestlers run in those things to lose weight.
And I was like, within 3 minutes, I'm thinking, this is gonna be bad. And then I can feel it start to translate into my face, and I can feel like beads forming under my nose and on my temples and on my forehead. And at first I try to play it cool, and just first of all, getting an arm out of one of those things is impossible. It's just like I finally get one out and like kind of like bat, do a little dab, and I think that's good. Immediately it's back, and I'm just getting hotter and hotter. And I tell her, I'm like, hey, I'm sorry I'm so warm, which means I'm sorry I'm so sweaty.
Right.
And I start to go on to as an explanation. She's like, it's fine, it's fine. Like she interrupts me to be like, it's fine, which means that it is bad.
Yeah.
And that she's acknowledging it, and that she's going to be like, hey, I don't want you to feel bad about this. And I can just feel it getting worse. And then I can feel something I'm not used to, which is my lower back sweats enough that it's creating like a melt rivers, like snow melt rivers, essentially, where it's all channeling to the middle and just sliding right down into my butt.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a unique experience that I've never had before.
It's unpleasant.
This is bad. This is a lot of sweat. I'm getting like the rivers are rising. They all this sweat has found each other, and they're like, hey, we're gonna head. There's too much to stay up. Like it's raining on my body essentially at this point. And
the uniqueness of that sensation is very jarring the first time it happens. Like there's very similar. There's an episode of our favorite show, Taskmaster, where Alex Horn is made to sit on a cake bare-assed, and you could tell that he is like different after that, because that's not even close to anything he's ever done. And there's I haven't done it, but I imagine there's nothing like sitting on a cake and having cake go up your butthole. And so the first time a river of sweat is going down your ass, it's Your whole body is, my first instinct was like, what's this invasion? What's happening?
Someone stop it. So someone call the police. I'm being violated.
I think I've been shot.
It was so deeply uncomfortable that like I did a little shimmy in the chair. She's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. No way I'm fucking telling you what just happened to me. But like I'm just noticing. She's not facing me towards the mirror, which is generally something I enjoy with a haircut, so I don't panic the whole time. Mm-hmm. But I'm facing away, and I just feel it. I know that it's all over me, and I know that a part of me that sweats a lot is the back of my scalp, like right at the top of my neck where the short hairs are. I know that I'm going to get a lot there, and I can every once in a while, she's just getting out the hair dryer just because, like, it's too much.
Yeah.
And so I keep apologizing, and she keeps saying, it's okay, it's okay. And I was like, this must be what it's like for sweaty people. Like, we had a boss who famously would always wear a sweater, no matter the heat, over a dress shirt, because dress shirt was essentially just a sponge for him.
Yeah.
And then he had an outer layer to look like a normal human being. But I was like, this must be what it's like. I am absolutely dying here.
Yeah.
It's roasting.
It's a rough time, and it's the fact that you mentioned like haircuts specifically makes me think of something. This is a story I told as a guest on the Daily Zeitgeist 100 years ago. They do a segment in the beginning of their show where it's things that are underrated, overrated, and I think something else. And my underrated was barbers and stylists, like people who work at these salons, because I'm sure you thought that she was unhappy with you, but she is saying not to worry all the time, and she's being a professional and she's doing her job. And I observed that when I was getting a haircut years ago, and the guy next to me was an incredibly sweaty guy, and like his hair was greasy and he was nonstop sweating. And he also had, to add insult to injury, just like boils or something on his neck that like had like traces of blood on them. And this guy seemed like the sweetest guy in the world, because he kept saying like he's aware of his situation. Yeah. He's like, I'm really sorry about my sweat, I'm really sorry about my hair, I'm really sorry about my neck, like over and over again. Yeah. And the woman cutting his hair, like every professional haircutter I've ever seen in my life, was like, oh, no worries, it's fine, just like doing her job. And I'm watching this thinking like, this is, you are a saint. Yeah. And this is not what you fucking signed up for. You're not a doctor. You didn't take an oath where you're, where it's like, I'm going to see some of the gross stuff too, and that's part of it. I'm a professional. You are not paid enough, and I'm sure this is not the only sweaty, greasy, bloody person you've had to cut the hair of, and you're just like smiling through it, and you'll be miserable when you get home, I'm sure, but like, man, we don't pay these people enough. This sucks. This is a really bad time.
It's such an intimate experience.
And you can't pick, like, as a normal barber or hairstylist, you can't like say no to clients. It's just like, you show up to work, it's like, who am I getting today?
Right.
Oh, I'm up and it's that one.
All right. And just touching somebody's head over and over again, and like, they're trusting you with an awful lot too, because the part of you that everyone sees first, like, it's in both cases, it's a very intimate and kind of vulnerable experience.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is tough for them. I was thinking as it was happening too, because she was like, well, because she's not my usual barber, but he was all backed up. He had a lot of clients, I guess. So I'm on the hunt. And she's like, well, where did you used to get your haircut? And I told her his name, and she was like, okay. And I was like, yeah, he's in Culver City. And she's like, okay. And I realized in that moment, oh yeah, you don't fucking know each other. That in other industries, there's enough like crossover, and there's events that you go to, and there's summits and stuff where like new technology is coming out that everybody has to learn together. That's happening in so many other industries, and all those people just kind of know each other. But for hairdressers, you know the other people in your barbershop, if that.
Right.
And then I don't think you keep track of any other barbers. Like, there's no, you don't cross in the same circles in any other way. It seems so lonely. It seems like you don't have anybody to actually out there to be like, oh, what's it like at your salon? And like, then you find out, unless you just by chance find these people, but there's nobody, like, it's not being forced on you like every other occupation.
Right. And I also doubt when you're talking about your normal bartender, your normal barber, I doubt that she's like, I'll look him up and like, and ask what's so special about this guy. Let's see if he's got any tips for me. I'm sure she's just like, all right, yeah. He can't possibly be doing anything special.
Right. Yeah. Is he blowing your mind? No, he's just doing my hair. Okay. Well, yeah. Then he's another normal barber. That's great. But I do get the same sense that, like, it's also with a lot of people who work in salons and everything. It's not like they're just like, yeah, this is my day job, which I think a lot of other careers are. They feel really passionate about it. They have a tattoo of scissors on their wrists and stuff like that, where it's like, I cut. That's my job. Like, I like it. I love it. And they feel a certain amount of artistic satisfaction from it. So it makes sense to me in my mind that I'm like, yeah, you guys should be going to conventions together. Like, you guys should be like hooking up and like figuring it out and like talking it out. But I just don't think there's anything that's happening like that for barbers.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we can wrap it up here, Dan.
Cool. Do it.
You have been listening to Quick Question with Soren and Daniel. You can follow us, of course, on Twitter. You can talk to us there as well. Daniel is at @DOB_INC. My name is Soren. I am at Soren, Soren, _LTD. You can also go to Quick Question. Ask them questions. @QQ_Soren and Dan. You can email us at QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. And you can find and follow and hire our producer and sound engineer, Gabe Harder, by just finding him on the streets. Anywhere he hangs out, I assume he feels like an East Side guy, probably somewhere around there. Also, our theme music is by the amazing Me Rex. You can find Me Rex's music at merex.bandcamp.com. That's it, right? Anything else?
Yeah. You want me to
cover? No. Yeah. Okay, then bye.
Bye.
I've got a quick question for you, alright? I wanna hear your thoughts, I wanna know what's on your mind. I've got a quick question for you, alright? The answer's not important, I'm just glad that we could talk tonight. So what's your favorite?
How did you get?
When will I be?
Remember?
Was it ever? Where did all the
guys
go?
Oh, forget it.
Soren, Billy, Daniel, O'Brien. Two best friends and comedy writers. If there's an answer, they're gonna find it. I think you'll have a great time here.